Hello, welcome to Microbyte. My name is Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog on ZDNet.
And on this edition of Microbyte, we discuss Windows 8 after the hype, now what? Does it measure up? With a new iPad just launched from Apple, we wonder who's got the tablet advantage. Is it iPad or is it Windows on ARM? Whoa. And we look at Microsoft's cloud, Office 365 and Azure. Where is it and what will you pay? So Mary Jo, a new little thing has just launched, consumer technology preview of Windows 8. And I think you'll agree, as we were talking about offline, I don't think since Windows 95 has the level of hype been so crushing or all-encompassing. And something I thought was interesting this time around, that a new category of fanboy has emerged, wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I would agree on both counts. I think there's a ton of hype right now, and I'm very disturbed to see a new trend where anybody who dares complain about any feature, something they don't like in Windows 8 Consumer Preview, something that's not working for them, something they can't get used to, they're just being shouted down on Twitter and blogs and other kinds of social media. And I'm really disturbed by that, because isn't this a beta? And aren't people supposed to see what works and what doesn't and be free to express that? Instead, it's like, oh, you're just complaining and you aren't giving it a chance and you don't know how to use a computer. And I'm like, wow, okay, this is not the Windows community I know. This is more like the Apple fanboy community.
Well, what do you think accounts for that this time around?
I think the stakes are really high. I mean, Microsoft really needs this to be a home run success. And if this even approaches in any way, shape, or form what happened with Windows Vista, they're in huge trouble. I've seen so many interesting comments. Like one I saw recently that kind of hit home to me was, you know, who is Microsoft helping with the way they're designing Windows 8? Is it themselves or is it consumers? Mm-hmm. And you know, the biggest complaint that you see when you're looking, you know, what is it that people really are having a problem with? It's an operating system that's trying to be too many things at the same time, you know, trying to be all things to all people. You know, people who are trying it on tablets seem to be having a much better experience with it, because it's designed to be first and foremost an operating system for a touch tablet. People who are installing it on a PC, especially one that may not have the optimal resolution to support Windows 8, they're not having as good an experience, because if you don't know how to use shortcut keys, you're kind of stumbling around trying to figure out the hot corners Microsoft's engineered into the product, how charms come out from the right, how you swipe down with a mouse. There's like a lot of things that are definitely not intuitive.
And but they do have the desktop side to the personality, don't they?
Yeah.
Surely that is supposed to let people get around this. If you don't like the Metro UI, the charms, the hot corners, you can just flip over to desktop personality, the classic side, which is designed for traditional in quote marks, laptops and PCs, desktops. Yeah,
but in the end, you always kind of have to go back to the Metro version, because the Metro UI, it's not really just a UI, it's replacing the start menu that's on Windows now. And so, you know, when you want to go to a new program, the way you're probably going to do it, unless you are very conversant in using Windows keys, hotkeys, you're going to have to keep going back to Metro. And so people are kind of like, some people like the, you know, Metro look and feel and how you have the different live tiles on the screen. Some don't. But pretty much everybody's like, I don't really love that I'm being forced to keep going back to Metro to navigate and to kind of make that as my default experience. I don't care for that.
Well, something that I've noticed is there's a couple of things. There's some good reviews out. One of our own writers, Andrew Lofsky's, done a good couple of takes on the operating system. And some Tim Anderson's done some good work too. And the things that keep coming up are there's duplication of features. There are some basic features that are missing, for example, that you would find in a tablet or you'd find in most tablets. The one thing that kind of struck me was this Internet Explorer 10, the lack of integration between the version in in Metro and in between the desktop. If you've got a session open on Metro, it won't carry over to the desktop. The cookies don't carry over. So that's going to be very confusing for people. You've got to be very present and understand what's going on there. And the average consumer, as we know, is not going to know or care about that. They're just going to think, why is my page on Amazon that I was on just now on in the Metro, why is it not working in the desktop site? There must be a problem with me or the PC and I'll have to reboot all over again or something. From what I've seen, it looks beautiful, but that's also partly an issue as well, is the apps are, if you look at the interface, and if you keep swiping to the, if you keep swiping to the left and putting the screen in front of you, very quickly you kind of, it's like a map of the old world. You run out of known territory very quickly. And the beautiful cartography falls off, and you're suddenly in this kind of like, you look at the old logos and icons, the old apps are there, and it doesn't, that kind of beautiful Metro UI doesn't follow through in through the whole thing. Very quickly you're looking at old icons for things like Adobe or for Word or for Office, and it ain't looking so pretty anymore, is it?
I know. Yeah, it's true. You know, it's a lot. There are a lot of things I think that'll shake out over time. You know, as more developers create Metro versions of their apps, you know, you'll see more Metro apps populating your main view. And but again, the part I'm wondering about, and I think a lot of people are wondering about, is okay, how much is Microsoft listening to the feedback that's happening right now? And how much of this is just cast in stone? And too bad, this is the way it is, guys. We're not changing it. And I have to say, I believe it's more the latter than the former. They're going to just say, okay, you know, it reminds me a lot of the Office ribbon. Remember when they first introduced the ribbon and everybody screamed bloody murder, like, that's it, I hate it, I'm never buying Office again, I'm not using this product. And they just went forward with it and said, we're doing this for your own good. And I feel like this is another case of that, and that Microsoft's going to take the consumer preview from here. They're going to make a few tweaks to it. And then they're going to roll out the release candidate that's going to look almost identical to this, and then they're going to RTM the product. I think people have a very false sense of hope that, you know, there's petitions online like fixingwindows8.com, you know, where people are trying to get them to change the UI, and it's like, guys, they're like done with the operating system here, and they're not going to suddenly go back. Like, I had one guy tell me this week, they are definitely going to add the start button back to Windows. I said, if they do, I will be stunned, because I think they've decided we're taking it out and it's not coming back.
It's not coming back. I remember one of your articles recently, you talked about the unknowns, still the unknowns on this. Can you just recap some of those for us? Because obviously I feel very much like with Windows 8, we're being presented with a magic show, or very much like, here it is, and it's fantastic. And then you have the echo chamber around it saying, oh, it's fantastic, it's a Metro UI, I love it. And if you don't get it, then you're just stupid. And then beyond but then there's a great sense of, we still don't know very much about how we'd use it, where we'd use it, how we'd build for it, how applications are coded. There's many things to it. There's more to this show behind the scenes that we haven't been apprised of yet or got to know, have we?
No. And, you know, because so many people are taking things that are just rumors out there as proven fact. Like, for example, we don't know what the versions are going to be of Windows 8 still. We don't know how many different SKUs are there going to be, you know, what's going to be in each SKU, what isn't. So we don't know anything about that. We actually don't even still know the final name, believe it or not. Like, you're assuming, and so am I at this point, it's Windows 8, because they launched a whole new Windows 8 logo that also created a ton of controversy, which was kind of hilarious. I know. People are like, I don't like how the angle of the panes are on the logo. I'm like, guys, they're not going to change the logo. That they've spent like probably $1 million, like some consultancy building this logo.
Yeah.
and so, you know, we don't know the real final name of the product. We don't know anything about the SKUs. We know zero about Windows on ARM. Mm-hmm. I mean, all we know is it exists in some form. I still haven't found a single tester out there who has it. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to launch at the same time as Windows on x86, Windows 8 on x86, which, by the way, we don't know when this is going to launch still. Microsoft still hasn't said, is it Q3, is it Q4? Mm-hmm. Most of the people I'm talking to are betting like late Q3, early Q4. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to developers who say there's basically still no documentation for them to build their apps. Like Microsoft saying, okay, everybody hurry up, build some Metro apps so we can have them in the store when we launch the product. So we're not going to tell you when we're going to launch the product, and we're not going to tell you how to build the apps really either. But you're supposed to just suddenly go do this somehow, magically.
But somehow I think WinRT is the bridge, isn't it? Because it'll C#, C++, etc. will feed into it. It'll do some kind of like sleight of hand conversion and spit out a Windows 8 app ready for download from the marketplace.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and that's another point of confusion. Like a lot of people don't really understand what is WinRT. I see people throwing around the word Metro, like I'm building a Metro app. And then when you talk to them about what they're building, they're actually building a desktop app that has some Metro look and feel to it. And it's like, this isn't a Metro app, and you're not gonna be able to sell this in the store. Do you know that? This isn't how this is going to work. And it just feels like there's so many unknowns. Oh, and we don't know the price, of course. We don't even know, like, what kind of new hardware is there going to be for it? And this to me is the biggest unknown that I'm surprised you don't hear more people talking about. You know, like the consumer preview came out, and so Microsoft said, okay, you can download this on any PC that runs Windows 7. And so a lot of people did, and then came to realize that if the resolution isn't high enough on your screen, things don't work. Like the store doesn't work. And they just kind of found this out, and like people were sending me notes like, it doesn't really work on my PC and I have Windows 7 on it. So that was kind of glossed over, you know. When you want to show how great a new experience is, it's really important to have it on hardware that makes people want to buy it. And so if you are just somebody who downloaded this onto an older PC, probably not with touch support on it, I don't think you're going to be very happy with what you're getting and what you're seeing. So it's not really showing people like what the ultimate experience is going to be. And I think this is giving people probably a more negative impression of Windows 8 than actually what they're going to have when the product is out on brand new hardware.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. We'll segue in a second on to, because it's we're coming very, very close here to talk about Windows on ARM as well, which was the second talking point. Tell me, what do you think? Verdict, Windows 8, they can call it what they want. It's still a beta. There's still a lot to go. Where are we? How can we quantify where it is right now?
So we're I'd say almost all done in the development phase. They didn't call the product feature complete, but they called it near feature complete when they launched the beta. So the only things left now are one release candidate, which I'm betting we're going to see this summer, and then RTM, and then launch. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are thinking like, oh, there's going to be like a whole bunch more chances for us to have input, and there's going to be multiple betas, and then we're going to have some more time. No. We're very close now to this being done. And I'm estimating, this is just my estimate because Microsoft's not giving us any guidance on this, but I think RTM Q3, and I think you're going to start seeing it on new PCs October or so, because the OEMs are saying it's going to be out in holiday time. So it's going to be out by then.
October has been the traditional launch time, official launch time for these things, hasn't it?
Yeah, September, October, yeah.
Okay, well, while the iron's still hot on this, WOA, Windows on ARM. We've just had the launch of the latest iPad from Apple. People are getting extremely excited about it, in my opinion, needlessly so. And I'm not just saying that, but let's look at it empirically. What have you got this time? HD? And you have a fatter camera that can do more, pack more pixels in there before. I do wonder if this is in the real world, we call this a feature upgrade. And if someone like Samsung had come out with this in their tablet, no one would care. It's the fact it's Apple that's got the world excited, and the amount of media coverage about it is just embarrassing, to be honest. Journalists, professional journalists on major news organizations are interviewing people in queues, asking them what they think about it, and literally being told to F off. That's what I read today.
Yeah, me too. I read that.
So, really, editors of the world's traditional media, you need to get your shit together, because it's only a tablet, all right? Now, Having said that, it does command as a piece of product, it does have the dominant market share. Let's call it market share in this area, and it has reinvigorated, rejuvenated a whole genre of computing. Maybe some people would even say invented a whole new genre, even though it's not true. So they're out there, and of course, Windows on ARM has been Microsoft's big play to try and get a slice of that action, to try and come back at Apple, because the Intel chips were not fast enough and they weren't consuming as small amount of power needed to get in there and to really get into that market against Apple. And ARM is supposedly can do that, and they've got a huge market share in smartphones so far. So where do we think, who's going to, where is this thing? We've got the iPad, the latest iteration of the iPad. It's going to be good. It's going to, probably more people are going to buy it. I mean, Apple is even doing trade-ins on old iPads. Their market share is not going to go down anytime soon. We still haven't got a convincing Windows tablet yet. And as you said, we still don't even know what the ARM device is going to look like. I mean, like you said, it's been a very closely guarded secret from Microsoft. Anything we know is pretty much speculation about what kind of an ARM device is going to look like. I mean, both of us have written and said in the past, it will be on controlled lockdown devices. You won't be able to configure them. You won't be able to install any kind of app on there. It'll be like, we're thinking it'll be like a Kindle style device, which is completely locked down and owned by Amazon. So we can see, we're kind of teasing out certain things about what we think this thing is going to look like, but we haven't actually seen any early ARM device running Windows yet. We haven't seen Windows on ARM yet, apart from something Sinofsky flashed up recently. But again, these demonstrations are always highly suspect. So who do we feel has got the advantage? Who do you think is going to buy these Windows things? I mean, what do you think, MJ, from your hearing, what you've seen and what from your experience covering Microsoft, will Woa close the gap? Will it open up a complete new market for Microsoft?
I had a lot of hope for Woa, I'd say like a year ago.
Yeah.
Because this was when Microsoft was still trying to sell Windows 7 tablets to people in the enterprise, and they were having a heck of a time. But you know what they were selling to them was, here's what iPads can't do, and here's what we can do on Windows 7 tablets. Mm. And one of the big things they were advertising at that point was like the no compromise experience, like you can run all your existing apps. And now we found out in more recent months that on Woa, Microsoft's not going to allow any third-party applications to run in the desktop on those tablets. Mm-hmm. So that is really kind of like not exactly a true statement that they made there. I mean, Microsoft's going to allow Internet Explorer and its own four Office apps to run in the desktop and some other Windows utilities, but they're not going to let any third-party apps run. They're also not going to support plugins at all on Woa devices. So no Silverlight, no Flash, that's it. That was another one of the things that they kept selling when they were selling Windows 7 tablets. They were saying, hey, look, we can run Flash, we can run Silverlight, and Apple can't and won't. So they're taking away the advantages that they have been using to sell and the things that they were touting as what they could do better. Another recent example we just found out around the time that the consumer preview came out, Microsoft posted up a document which is called the business guide for consumer preview. And in there, it just kind of casually mentions, oh, and guess what? You're not going to be able to join an Active Directory domain with Woa tablets. This was another thing that they were selling against Apple. They were saying, you can't even manage an iPad in a corporate environment. They can't even join a domain. Well, they're not going to be able to join a domain, it seems, unless they change their policy on that. So all of these things, that they were selling as, here's where we're going to be better than the iPad, they've taken them away. Mm-hmm. So now I'm just like, okay, they're going to have a pretty awesome battery life and a pretty low price to now compete with the iPads. They're not going to have, as far as we know, the Retina display. So when you come into a store and you look at a Woa tablet and you look at an iPad, iPad's just going to look a heck of a lot nicer. Mm-hmm. The display is just going to be better, as far as the quality of the movies and the photos and all that you can see, even the text. Some people say, the last advantage they do have is they're going to have Office included with Woa tablets. They're going to have Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote when you buy the tablet. the rumor is, it seems very strongly believable, that they're going to also port those same apps, those same four apps, to iPads. So, okay, you have no advantage right now. You have no competitive advantage. So somebody, if somebody comes into a store and you say, here's a WoWA tablet, here's an iPad, which one do you want? And when you put them up against each other, they're going to be pretty much the same. Mm. And Apple is just a master at user experience, and because they control the whole end-to-end hardware, software, cloud, everything, it's a package that you get. It's all one thing. It's going to be really hard for Microsoft and the partners to compete with them, I think.
I think it is, yeah. We just have to wait and see what kind of devices come out. We don't really know, do we?
We don't know. No. I haven't found anybody who's actually had time with a prototype WoWA device. They've said they're going to have them out to developers and partners sometime around now. Mm. And I still haven't found anybody who has one. And even those devices aren't going to be like the kind of hardware you're actually going to be able to buy. They're going to be more like just something that doesn't even look like the final device, just something you can use to develop an app and make sure it test it, make sure it works there. So I don't know. I mean, unless they like stun us and come out with something with like, 10, 12, 14-hour battery, or come in at like some crazy low price, I don't see how they're going to compete with them.
Well, we'll see. It'd be interesting. Because in a way, Microsoft's always had an issue with on the PC side, the Intel x86 side of life, in terms of you get a lot of choice from devices that are made from the manufacturers, but the classic criticism is they might not be as good or last as well as a Mac. Mm-hmm. The Mac still does pretty well, even though they're more expensive. Microsoft likes to talk about the Apple tax. But I've got Macs that are 10 years old, still running as good as the first day when I opened them. You can't say that of a PC. Mm. I do wonder, they have teamed up with the ARM chip manufacturers and licensees, but it's history kind of says it'll be repeat of what happened with x86, which is nice designs, but hey, it's not an Apple, and what I really want to buy is an Apple. Then we'll have to see more advertising campaigns such as that came around, I think, Windows 7 and in post Windows Vista, where you had to kind of show consumers going into places like Best Buy and buying, being surprised at what great value they got for a PC when they would have gone in and bought a Mac. Usually, hello, I'm Steve and I'm a Windows PC, that kind of advertising campaign. Will we see that again for the ARM based on the potential weakness of whatever ARM devices we see come out? That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Well, I still, for all the criticisms here about WoWA, that's the form factor I'm the most interested in seeing Windows 8 on, actually. Mm. Because, we've talked about this previously on Microbyte. We've said, Microsoft's position that they're not going to give way on is they're saying all tablets are PCs. And so they're saying they should be one experience. Everything should run the same way on both. I use my iPad really differently than I use my PC. And I want something that's like an iPad but works in the Windows environment. And I'm not, so far, I'm just not seeing or hearing about Windows 8 features that make me want to upgrade my laptop to it. But I would like to see it on a touch device.
I think it's different before we get too far down this kind of theoretical conversation. It seems to be different use factors.
Yeah.
I mean, while conceptually they are all computers, they all have an operating system, they have hardware, they have chips. Yeah, they're all computers. I mean, an iPad is a computer, no matter what Garnet says about it. It's like a new market segmentation, but people use them in different ways. That's why we've suddenly got this crazy device proliferation of like multiple, before you know it, you find yourself with several Macs, PCs, and tablets between home and the office. It's just it ain't what it was. It's not the 90s anymore, where you had one PC and it was in the office and it's on the desktop. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about things that are a little anchored, a little even more ethereal than this, the cloud. Office 365 and Azure, and there's been some price cutting again, hasn't there?
There has. They've been cutting prices on both Azure and Office 365 recently, which is interesting. On Azure, there's like, it's on certain kinds of instances. I can't even remember all the different kinds of like subcategories here, but
they've had the current pricing for that is pay as you go, and what was the other one? Oh god, I'm blanking it. 6 month free was it? Wasn't it?
Yeah, they were doing a lot of different promotional pricing, and now this is more like extra small instance pricing. So meant to attract people at the lower end. They're just trying to get people to get in there and kick the tires, you know, and just give it a chance, because a lot of people, they see the price on Azure and they're like, oh, that's for big companies. It's not for me. I don't even want to experiment on it or try it. And that's not who they're necessarily trying to get. They're trying to get companies of all sizes and even startups. They just launched a new startup incubator in Israel for Azure this week. So they're really, you know, trying to find ways to get people to just give it a chance, especially companies who normally aren't really big Microsoft shops like startups.
But from what I can see, the price differential isn't huge. I mean, the Amazon is the big one they're competing against.
Yeah.
Because realistically, there is no other real cloud, and there's OpenStack, but that's still in early stages. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Rackspace provides some of that. So essentially, it comes down to Amazon and who else, and if you're not VMware or Salesforce. So, but from what I've seen, the pricing, I mean, you're talking pennies. I mean, there's not a lot between them really. So I don't see how much more they can cut. Can you?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's just, and I think, as we've discussed before, the problem here with let's talk Azure is not maybe the pricing, it's the developer experience, which is something with Scott Guthrie is trying to address, isn't he?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people say, you know, it's funny that people always talk in PCs about the race to the bottom, like, you know, everyone's cutting prices. Well, now you're starting to see this on the cloud, too. It's like, you know, the advantage isn't, like you're saying, it's not because you pay 2 cents more per instance or something or less than that. You know, it's already pretty cheap to actually use some of these things when you look at what you can do and how much value there is in them. You know, Microsoft has up until now really tried to differentiate itself from other infrastructure as a service players by saying we're not just hosting companies, right? We give you more value. We're trying to give you a whole development platform. And so that's how they've kind of pitched it. They've pitched themselves as more of a full service play, and they've talked about themselves as being a platform as a service company and not an infrastructure as a service company. Mm. But what you're starting to see happen is they're pricing themselves more like Amazon, which is more of a hoster. And now they're going to be, in the coming months, adding things like, you know, the ability to host a Linux instance on Azure. So that's more like an infrastructure as a service play. So it seems like they're really trying to go broad, trying to almost reposition themselves as more of kind of we're a one-stop shop. We can do everything Amazon can do, everything Google can do, and everything OpenStack can do, and that we're in all these spaces and can compete with them on price, on features, and on the development tools.
Well, they have struggled on the price. I mean, I wrote a few weeks back how the revenue target for Azure is low. It's about I think it's about 80 million. Or 800 million, sorry.
Yeah.
It's a matter of zeros. And they're actually, they're going to hit, they're not going to even hit that, they're on 60. The target is actually going to hit 60 for the year. So the targets are low, and they're not even going to hit the targets. And they keep telling us, they don't keep telling us anymore. If you go to the website, you'll see customers listed up there. But I mean, you've got to imagine these are early adopter customers who've been encouraged to join and aren't necessarily paying the full price to use it, or if any price to use it.
Yep. And now, you know, this week we're seeing they're doing the same thing on Office 365, which is interesting.
Tell me about that, because that has been a success for them, hasn't it? I mean,
yeah. You know,
especially since Google Apps. I mean, it's the big thing. So I'm surprised to see there was such a big price cut on that. Any thoughts on why they decided to discount something that was doing a lot better than Azure?
Yeah. So I'll give you my theory, and then I'll tell you what they're saying. So actually, I'll do that in reverse. So what they're saying is they can pass on all these price cuts, which are about 20% roughly across the board, because they're now realizing economies of scale in the data center because of how many people have bought Office 365. So the last number we had was 5 million seats of Office 365 were sold between the end of June and mid-September. We haven't had a number since then. Mm-hmm. But that's pretty good for like just starting out of the gate. And, you know, they're also migrating over a lot of the BPOS customers now to Office 365 as well. So that's their take. Their take is, you know, we did so well, we can pass on the savings to you guys. What I hear from people is if you look at what they're cutting, the 20% cuts are on the enterprise plans for Office 365. So it's on the E plans and the K plans primarily. Mm-hmm. And if you look at where have they been selling Office 365 really well, they've been selling to small businesses, not to enterprises. They've been selling to these P plans, you know, which are like really ridiculously low, like $6 per user per month. Mm-hmm. But they haven't been doing as well in the enterprise. So a few of my contacts have been saying it's more they're trying to jumpstart the enterprise sales of Office 365 with these cuts because that's where they're not selling that well.
Yeah.
They're denying that. They're denying that, of course. But they're, you know, when you ask them, okay, so which enterprises are you selling to? They do have some named accounts. They have a few, and they've been publicizing some of the bigger named accounts lately. But I think it could be a case of, you know, okay, we did get the customers away from Google Apps and Google Docs that we wanted to, and now we need to sell to the bigger customers, you know, the 50,000 seat people plus. So
a lot of those big customers were very much the high profile government customers, weren't they? Like the city authorities in the States, and there was a big battle over those, but they seem to have gone quiet. And obviously the intention of signing those guys was you could fly the flag and everyone else would follow onwards, but this price cut was suggesting to me that people haven't moved. I know that last year, I think it was Kevin Turner was talking about the trying to break down Microsoft's success on the cloud, and he was conflating the terms slightly, but it was very clear that it was the BPOS stuff and Office 365 stuff that had been doing very well for the company, where they were making their money. And for me, that was an update of the ages old battle between Exchange seats and Lotus Notes seats, and who can sign up the most former Novell NetWare seats, basically. So it doesn't seem to me like there's been much of a change there, but I think it's fascinating that this is an attempt. The price cut is designed to get those enterprise customers on board who are still running their own Exchange servers, I'd say.
Yeah, and the other thing they did in the past couple of weeks that was interesting was they put out a blog post saying, and by the way, we do have a government cloud offering coming. And they didn't really offer any details on that. But, you know, they used to have this thing, BPOS F for federal, and they don't really have an exact complement to that right now with Office 365. So it sounds like they've got something they're going to be announcing in the coming months.
Well, they'd have to get it recertified for the US federal, wouldn't they? And then it'd be interesting to see if they actually bring it over to the UK as well, because Microsoft is now involved in the UK government. It's Azure that's running the whole G Cloud cloud store here.
Oh, it is? Wow.
It's embarrassing because the cloud actually went down on February the 29th for a couple of hours. And, of course, the G Cloud store went down with it as well. Yeah. So I'm kind of slightly surprised in that one, given that Azure doesn't have much of a customer track record, especially not amongst government, and yet here it is running the government G Cloud in the UK.
Oh man, I didn't realize that went down. That we haven't even talked about the outage, the February 29th outage. Yeah. I mean, it was in some ways it was the worst possible day for that to happen because it was also the launch of Windows 8 Consumer Preview. But in some ways that gave them awesome air cover. I mean, they didn't get a lot of press coverage on this outage. And I remember when I woke up, I saw people in Europe were complaining about it, and I was pinging all my contacts in the U.S. saying, are you down? And everybody was like, no, we're not down. And then a few hours later, it was like a rolling outage, right? It hit Europe, then it came to the U.S. as the time shifted because it was a leap year bug. Yeah. And then it hit everybody in the U.S. And so they were fielding this huge, I mean, like, it was a very major outage. It was like multiple hours. It didn't take down everybody because some people were totally unaffected, but it took down a lot of customers, especially in Europe. And it was so bad, they ended up offering a 33% credit for the whole month to everybody. To try to say, okay, sorry, we screwed that up early. We know
we
did.
It's embarrassing for something like a leap year error, which you would imagine they'd have expected or anticipated. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that's is unexpected, is it? The one thing I did notice, the outage was actually shorter than the infamous Amazon outage.
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Yeah, for last year, April last year, which is Amazon was out about 36 hours. Microsoft seems to have been maybe 8 or something like that. So, you know, they haven't suffered quite as badly, but it's still not the kind of thing that you want happening to your servers, is it?
No. For me, the best part of it is they posted a full dissection of what went wrong, like down to a very minute level of detail, which was good. And they admitted, you know, we've got to have other ways to communicate to our customers, because they kept saying during the outage, just check the status dashboard and you can see what's going on. And people were sending me notes saying the status dashboard is down too. Mm. And so, you know, we can't check it. And Microsoft wasn't commenting on what was going on. They weren't giving any updates beyond the dashboard. And so they've said now they realize they can't just have, you know, this one tiny communications channel and count on that to get word to all their customers. I mean, their switchboards were overrun by people calling in going, what the heck is going on? You know, and they didn't have enough people to answer the phones. So,
yeah,
not good.
Not good, but the cloud grows up and we'll see if Microsoft manages to grow with it as well. Yeah. Which, all of which I think brings us on to the Steve Ballmer Mood Index.
Well, before you go into the options, I will note their stock price has been going up lately. It's right at the moment, 32.83, which is pretty amazing considering how long Microsoft's stock was stagnating around 24, 23.
So here we go. Steve Ballmer's Mood Index. We have frustrated, intense. We have all business, and we have victorious. What mood is Steve Ballmer in, do you think?
Well, if you just based it on stock performance alone lately, I would say he was victorious because, man, that stock price has been stuck at 28 and below forever, and suddenly they're at 32 and 33. But, you know, there are other mitigating circumstances, like the Azure outage, I'm sure didn't sit well with Steve. And the consumer preview, you know, they're publicly saying how happy they are that people like Pogue and usual naysayers love it, but there's a lot of doubt out there too about it. So I'm going to peg it down a little and say all business.
Yeah, all business is probably good, I think, for the above reasons. Stock price is good, relatively speaking. Obviously, he's the company's chief salesman, so he's going to say Windows 8 all the way. But we've still got a lot of unknowns there, and even so, while there's a lot of people saying good things about it, I do feel slightly uncomfortable with the kinds of things that people are saying and where it's coming from as well. It doesn't feel quite right. So, you know, the unknowns have yet to surface on Windows 8, and we shall see more of that in coming months. Well, that does it for this edition of Microbyte. My name's Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog on ZDNet.
And this has been Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.